put a snake on my back. I keep a red bone on my side.
Good morning. Morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Thursday, December 3rd, 2020 on the One and Only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And it's getting interesting. This is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. A lot of folks starting to talk more and more about the great conjunction, the great conjunction. So astrology.com puts it this way: the 2020 great conjunction, Jupiter conjunct Saturn in Aquarius. So if you're an old school bad guy, this is an exciting time because you believe that you can harness some kind of magical, mysterious power in these kinds of events. And so try to use these moments as an opportunity to do things you think you could not do before, as Rahm Emanuel would say. So, you know, I think that they're, you know, it's just my conjecture. But I would say this is this is a large part of the push that we're feeling. I mean, there's a lot going on right now. And this drive to vaccinate the whole world is it's just absolutely astonishing to me. But I want to back up a little bit and perhaps start with something a little bit different. Backing up, I said that I would sort of finish the excerpts from the Microsoft Meeting Insight Computing System patent application, but actually I think I want to start with, I'll come back to that. I'm going to start with an excerpt from Milton Leitenberg's 2009 book review. Actually, William R. Clark wrote Bracing for Armageddon: The Science and Politics of Bioterrorism in America. And so in Milton Leitenberg's 2009 review of William R. Clark's book, published in 2005, Leitenberg includes the quote from John F. Wharton in Diary of a Man Struggling with Reality, published back in 1961. Barring a miracle, the United States of America will be devastated by nuclear and CBR, chemical, biological, or radiological warfare, not later than 1980. You know, and this gets back to the, you know, people talking about dirty, you know, nukes and suitcase nukes and nukes detonated at altitude and, you know, EMP attacks and all that stuff. I've addressed that from time to time. And I've basically said, in short, you know, from my limited vantage point, certainly not as well researched as Milton Leitenberg, it's been his life's work to look into this stuff. It's interesting, though, when you see someone who has such a wealth of knowledge on a subject and can't break out and see that maybe that applies to some of the other things that one is talking about. And it doesn't get you asking other questions. That always makes me skeptical. That notwithstanding, in his book review, in Milton Leitenberg's book review titled The Self-Fulfilling Prophecy of Bioterrorism, he has some interesting things to say, including this little bit. He draws from the back of William R. Clark's book. He says, you know, the meat of the book arrives in its final 50 pages. The politics of Clark turns to the book's title to examine the politics of bioterrorism in America. The answer is provided by a two brief survey of developments between 1985 and 2001. I've talked about this kind of stuff before. How did people know? How did people like Eric Prince know by 1997, 98 that we want to be in the terrorism industrial complex business. How did they know it would be so lucrative? You know, particularly to the unscrupulous. And so Milton Leitenberg writes, to explain the situation after 2001, Clark quotes terrorism expert Bruce Hoffman. Bioterrorism is where the funding was, and people were sticking their hands in the pot. It was the sexiest of all the terrorism threats, and it was becoming a cash cow. So the threat of bioterrorism became a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. It was an archetypal Washington politic. It was archetypal Washington politics in the sense that you generate an issue and it takes on a life of its own. So some folks remember Frank Keating, the former Oklahoma governor who presided over, you know, Oklahoma during the Oklahoma City false flag attack. And he had some interesting things to say a while back. This is a C-SPAN clip from Lessons. The C-SPAN, what do you call it? Video, I guess. The talk titled Lessons of Oklahoma City Bombing. So here's Frank Keating in his own words. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Well, welcome to our second day of the Homeland Security Institute. It's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning. My name is Josh Snavely. I'm
pause on that. I want to be a little bit further along. While we're waiting on that, it's interesting. There are a lot of things that you can find just floating around over at C-SPAN these days.
Thing and called you Dark can, Winter. Some of you probably are familiar with Dark Winter. And it was at Andrews Air Force Base. Sam Nunn, Senator from Georgia, Joe Whitley's wonderful state, at the time was the president. I was the visiting governor of Oklahoma. At the time, I was still the governor. And the exercise was a smallpox attack, on a shopping mall in Oklahoma City. And we had, like, Jim Woolsey, I think. No, Bill Sessions played the FBI director, and he was formerly that. Jim Woolsey played the CIA director, and he was formerly CIA director. And it was an exercise, no one anticipating 9/11. What was interesting at the end of the exercise was I was totally the skunk in the woodpile, because federalism is a great thing, but in a time of natural disaster and tragedy, it is problematical, because who's in charge? And none would say, well, Governor, we've got to open the borders, get stuff through, because that's an interstate going north, south, east. And I said, no. I was play acting, of course. Didn't have a script. I said, it's my state, and you're not bringing smallpox out of my state or into my state. Well, I'm going to have. Then we couldn't get any doctors to show up because they thought they'd get smallpox. And guess what? Everybody admitted, the medical personnel, they didn't know what the exercise would be. Doctors and medical professionals don't know what smallpox is because it was wiped off the face of the earth, allegedly, in the early 70s. So it's not something anybody notices. So point three is everybody better exercise what can happen, but also what might happen that's really dark and awful. And that requires leadership. That requires time and training. And a lot of people are not doing it.
That's kids say the darndest things, don't they? That's an interesting little bit. And, you know, most people don't understand the reality of how improbable these things that, you know, these exercises and things that are conducted, how improbable they are. And we need to come back to Rockefeller Foundation scenarios for the future of technology and international development. Why scenarios? Well, they explain in the lead up to the scenarios that they ran, which I think applies to so many other things. For example, the transition integrity projects. You know how they do this? It's almost like a childlike, you know, imagine if you will. And appropriately, I would say, you know, you kind of start to think of Rod Serling's voice, because they want you to take a trip in the Twilight Zone. This improbable thing just might occur. And I've always thought of that. You know, when you start thinking about Dark Winter, do most people understand that the materials are inaccessible? And every time we hear about, you know, for example, you go back to the weapons of mass destruction stuff. How likely was that? You know, Joe Wilson said, I don't see anything. Everybody else said, I don't see anything. There's nothing to find. And the more you dig into it, the more you realize that, the more you realize how improbable and unlikely these scenarios are, both on a small scale and then even more so on the scale that is imagined. And the reality of that manifests itself in the fact that these things never happen. Well, we have something happening now, and I think we should investigate further. But again, it's interesting, you know, the kinds of things that you can find sort of floating around. And so there was a panel discussion. You can find another video on C-SPAN titled Terrorist Use of Weapons of Mass Destruction. And that's an interesting discussion among some folks who know what they're talking about, including Milton Leitenberg. And so again, you know, it's not perfect, but you can find some interesting stuff over at C-SPAN. You do a search, for example, for Dark Winter, and you find that folks have been talking about this actually quite a bit, on and off, for quite a while, including Donald Rumsfeld, who made reference to, you know, the recent Dark Winter exercise conducted at Johns Hopkins University simulated a biological attack in which terrorists released smallpox in three separate locations in the United States. And you start to learn that, you know, Rummy and Cheney were instrumental in creating the terrorism industrial complex, fear-based terrorism industrial complex. So I'll give you some more excerpts from Milton Leitenberg's book review. But first, we'll hear from the man himself, and another interesting character who's been floating around for a long time. Some folks have written about. We'll talk about that,
folks,
when we come back. Stick
around. We're
living
in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
All right, we're going to play this clip real quick. So again, this is from the conference, Cato Counterterrorism Conference, back in 2009, terrorist use of weapons of mass destruction. Interesting exchange between Milton Leitenberg and another character we'll talk in a minute. Go ahead, please.
Back right. Please identify yourself, everybody.
Ed Destashir, University of Maryland. Seems to me that suicide attacks, the advent and growth of that has changed a lot of people's thinking about things. What all you mentioned was anthrax, I think. What do you think of the potential for using suicide bombers with something like smallpox, for example, in 10 different airliners going to 10 different cities?
Is that directed to Milton Leitenberg?
Well, I think this is one that Milton and I agree on completely. I think that's just the most unlikely scenario. The BBC did a movie about it a couple of years ago. One guy went to New York City and created a pandemic. Just, I mean, that's even beyond Hollywood. I don't know, Milton. I don't know if you disagree. That's just not the way you're going to disseminate an effective biological weapon. Go ahead, Milton.
Well, I don't know what you meant. You said a suicide bomber. You wouldn't disseminate smallpox with a bomb. You would use an aerosol spray. I assume you meant that.
No, I think he means someone infected with smallpox walking around in a city. Oh, is that what you meant?
I see.
Yeah.
Well, the basic part of that is to begin at the beginning, just like HEU, high enriched uranium or plutonium. Where do you get the smallpox from? There are only two official repositories in the world, one in the Soviet Union and Vector in Novosibirsk, in Kosovo and CDC in the United States. There are probably an institute or two in this Russian military that still have the material too. But they're all equally well guarded. In fact, it's the group that Randy works with now in Pittsburgh that put forward these lunatic scenarios. One was called Atlantic Storm and the other one was called Dark Winter. The likelihood of a terrorist group getting smallpox is extremely low. You did pick the easiest way for them to do something with it, because then they don't have to make a preparation, either wet or dry. One of those scenarios even used dry smallpox, aerosolized. The Soviet Union had several thousand people working for 35 years with smallpox. They never even dreamt or tried to make dry powder smallpox. We never made wet smallpox in our offensive program, which was 43 to 69. So, in theory, one could infect an individual. The question is, where do you get the material? Second, that would be the easiest way to deal with an attack, because an individual can infect only a relatively small number of other people. There's a short window of about 12, maybe 14 hours before the person is very significantly visible and also incapacitated. He's very ill. And is infected. Before that 12, 14 hours, he's not infective. So it's a short period of time. You would have minimal transmission. We know a lot about smallpox traditional infection rates historically. It's not simply you walk through a mall. That's not the way it works. You have to be in close contact for multiple hours with your family members or your coworkers, so that you get the infection. And this is terribly important because the exercises all falsify this nonsense. In other words, you would have a small number of people propagating to a small other population, and that can be dealt with just the way when I was young. I was born in 1933, so I got vaccinated when there was the last smallpox outbreak in New York. And that's still dealt with in the traditional ways by isolating the population and vaccinating everybody around. If you make preposterous scenarios that thousands of people are infected all at once and within hours infect thousands of others, you can't deal with anything. But that's why the fake scenarios are made, to show that you can't deal with anything. In the example you gave, it could be dealt with relatively easily.
Gentleman right here in the front.
I don't get to respond to the lunatic charge? Okay. Except Milton never interviewed anybody involved in those exercises, and we specifically, fewer people died in Dark Winter than died at Pearl Harbor. And Dr. D.A. Henderson was our real expert, the guy that led the effort to eradicate smallpox, but I won't respond to the other lunatic part. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a deep, dark rabbit hole, actually. And the Randy that Milton is referring to is none other than Randall J. Larson, who is an interesting and unsavory character. And let's see, Whitney Webb has written about him a little bit recently. D.A. Henderson is another interesting character. I mentioned him recently. He passed away back in 2016. But this is like, we're getting to the heart or the epicenter of the bioterrorism industrial complex. Stick around, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Please view, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Stop Terrorism. Please contact us if you or anyone you know who wants to be on our show at thetruthpharmacy@gmail.com. Keep it real. Take the red pill.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up, churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank, fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man, still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up, and long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Yeah. Welcome back. So the terrorism industrial complex, what was the recent video? Melissa Dykes was talking about how when they were doing their research for, especially for The Minds of Men, the documentary, the fear of the thing, you know, I think it was the shock treatment, basically to induce learned helplessness is kind of what that became with Dr. Martin Seligman's research at University of Pennsylvania. He and a colleague happened upon the learned helplessness theory by randomly and repeatedly shocking dogs. But, you know, the precursors to that decades before. And so she said that, you know, one of the things that stuck out to her was that it was the fear of the thing, the fear of the shock, for example, that drove the sheep more than the actual shock itself. And I think that definitely is something that factors into this terrorism industrial complex, or what I would call now the bioterrorism industrial complex. And so we heard Milton Leitenberg say it, I think, as well as you can put it, you know, at the end of that clip where he said, you know, the scenario that you outlined, sir, which is a kooky scenario anyway, suicide bomber, smallpox, 10 airliners, 10 cities, what are you trying to say? You know, like Larson said, I think what he's trying to say is, Who is this guy? Why is he asking this question? That's a whole different discussion. But, you know, to infect the minds of the people with the possibility of the lunatic scenario, like Milton Leitenberg put it. And it's interesting. So Milton Leitenberg sort of outs Randall J. Larson, saying, you know, the group that Randy works with, it's that group that put forth these lunatic scenarios. One was called Atlantic Storm. The other was called Dark Winter. The likelihood of a terrorist group getting smallpox is extremely low. And that's an understatement. I mean, it's, you know, if it happens, then, you know, somebody made sure it happened. Basically, it's one of those lie hop, high hop, my hop kind of scenarios. Let it happen on purpose, help it happen on purpose, or, you know, if you have to, make it happen on purpose. Kind of like smart power, hard power, or soft power, hard power, smart power kind of thing. You know, it's one of those conversations. But Milton Leitenberg said it at the end there, you know, if you make preposterous scenarios, thousands of people are infected all at once, and within our, you know, he said that's, you know, the scenario that you proposed, sir, even the as preposterous as that sounds, he said, that's, you know, something that we can deal with easily. But when you have these lunatic scenarios, is the way that Milton Leitenberg put it, you know, then you can't deal with anything. And he said, but that's why the fake scenarios are made, to show that you can't deal with anything. And so when you have these scenarios that are put forth, Dark Winter, Atlantic Storm, Cladex, Event 201, Crimson Contagion, the one that the Wheeler Center did, I forget, but, you know, they called theirs, you know, this is not a drill pandemic exercise, those kinds of things. And then they predict, you know, that the world economy would collapse and stuff. This is, people don't understand that, you know, when we talk about the world economy, for example, the way that from their vantage point, you know, I've talked about Bretton Woods and the Marshall Plan in particular lately, how the World Economic Forum contingent has been just you know, like an addict looking for a fix, talking about how we need to, you know, it's time for a new Bretton Woods and a new Marshall Plan and a new this and a new that. From their vantage point, this, it's like, I don't know, it's like rearranging furniture in your house. It's not a big deal. For most of us who don't see the world as they see it, that would be a task so monumental as to be insurmountable. But these guys, I mean, I think it's part of it is they see the world small enough that, I mean, it worked back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. You know, we imposed this system on the world. that's kind of cool. And then another part of it, so it's possible, in other words. And then another part of it is, and it would be easier this time because we have a sort of model to follow, but also they're sort of drunk with power. It's fun to do these things. It gives them a thrill or a charge. So, and that's just my conjecture. But I don't think most people see, you know, there, when you get into the planning of society and things, there is, and you have an economic mechanism like what we have, you know, the Keynesian economic mechanism of inflation, confiscatory inflation, that's stealing the wealth of the world, right? Out in plain sight in front of people, stealing their wealth right before their very eyes. And people don't understand how that works. You know, Clark's third law, I think, comes into effect. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. People don't understand how this is working, but that's the process by which the confiscation happens. Even Keynes wrote about that. And though it, you know, it happened slowly, you know, so people don't really realize what's happening, but doesn't make it any less real. And so if they've imposed that system on the world, which they have, and you have virtually, you know, 196 nations marching in lockstep, if you want to be a modern nation, you know, we'll let you participate in the credit monopoly, but if not, then, you know, we'll help you, we'll escort you back to the Stone Age. Everybody's playing along. And so if everyone's locked into this credit monopoly and it has a lifespan, you can only run it so long until you have to change the game up. Well, then you arrive at this kind of moment. Even though it's the scale is so large, it's inconceivable to most of us. Doesn't mean that they're not thinking it and trying to do it. They've been talking about it, and I tend to take them at their word, even though they're duplicitous and they employ sophistry and those kinds of things. So Milton Leitenberg said it. The group Randy works with put forth these lunatic scenarios, and the reason for the lunatic scenarios is, you know, the reason you, that's why you do these fake scenarios, because they're made to show you that you can't deal with anything. Randy Larson, a character we might come back to. But for now, let's just go to this, back to the self-fulfilling prophecy of bioterrorism, the book review by Milton Leitenberg, review of William R. Clark's Bracing for Armageddon, the science and politics of bioterrorism in America. It's an industry. It's a combine of change. And we've heard the characters talk about things like opportunity, opportunities of crisis. You know, the big example, everybody, you know, anybody that will be honest enough will tell you it goes back to, most notably in this country, you know, they go back to JFK back in 1959 saying, when written in Chinese, the word crisis is composed of two characters. One represents danger, one represents opportunity. The danger signs are all around us, which is a weird, you know, turn of phrase. I think Brzezinski might say neologism, and then we have to ask, well, what do you mean by that? Anyway, you think of the Rahm Emanuels, and those people just exploded out of the woodwork this year. Suddenly, everyone's talking about how it's a crisis and you never want a serious crisis to go to waste, opportunity to do things. And I will stand by my conviction that only sick people say that. Only terrorists say that. Only arsonists say those kinds of things. Normal people don't look at a house when it's on fire and say, well, now we can rebuild. That's a sick mind that says those kinds of things. So to the Self-Fulfilling Prophecy of Bioterrorism by Milton Leitenberg. Let's give you some excerpts. So, skipping ahead, Senator William Frist, Republican in Tennessee, who co-authored the legislation that initiated the expenditures. Well, actually backing up, according to many U.S. Leaders and experts, again backing up, most immediately to review William Clark's Bracing for Armageddon, The Science and Politics of Bioterrorism in America, an introductory volume, because following the Amerithrax scare in October and November of 2001, in which 22 people were sickened, of whom 5 died, U.S. government has authorized $57 billion for biological weapons prevention and defense. And again, it's funny how defense and offense become, it's funny how quickly they become indistinguishable. So according to many U.S. leaders and experts, this money, well, actually, last sentence, the proposed current rate of annual authorization for this purpose is $10 billion, which can be expected to continue in the future. According to many U.S. leaders and experts, this is money well spent fighting a dangerous threat. For example, biodefense in the 21st century, otherwise known as Homeland Security Presidential Directive 10 or HSPD 10, states that, quote, biological weapons in the possession of hostile states or terrorists pose unique and grave threats to the safety and national security of the United States and our allies. And I think it's interesting, you know, when you start talking about this kind of stuff, I'm always sort of intrigued how, you know, we make this false distinction. Biological weapons in the possession of hostile states. So just think about that for a second. Biological weapons in the possession of hostile states or terrorists pose unique and grave threats to the safety and security of the United States and our allies. So wait a minute. This is, you know, I feel myself tumbling in the sea of propaganda, in the surf, you know, being tossed by the surf, the waves of propaganda and the undercurrent. Because, you know, if you listen to, I don't know, guys like Howard Zinn or Noam Chomsky or whomever, and I would agree, the greatest exporter of terrorism, therefore the kind of the godfather, the overlord of terrorism, is the United States military-industrial complex. So biological weapons in the possession of hostile states or terrorists, I think you could make an easy argument that no state has been more hostile than the United States, and is the largest exporter of terrorism. You know, it's interesting that Larson, in the clip that we played, refers to D.A. Henderson, who's an interesting character. These guys are the, you know, guys like Henderson and Larson and Robert Cadlick, as Whitney Webb have written about, are the guys who are at the kind of ground zero of the genesis of the bioterrorism industrial complex in America. And, you know, for him to say that fewer people died in our exercise than died in 9/11, Pearl Harbor, is, first of all, the scenario is not real. You know, that's like, you know, comparing Dungeons and Dragons to a real life event. But beyond that, I'm pretty sure Larson has some idea of the fraud of Pearl Harbor. But this is a myth that we keep telling because, you know, if you expose the invisible boogeyman as the man behind the curtain, he's no longer the wizard. And the parlor trick doesn't work. So we can't do that. You know, we can't play Patrick Claussen talking about how every major terrorist event was actually state-sponsored terrorism to provoke and goad us into a conflict, to get the public buy-in on these kinds of things. And you sure can't talk about, you know, James Perloff going into more depth and detail on those kinds of things, because that just, you know, then where would you be with the terrorism industrial complex? You wouldn't be able to authorize $57 billion, would you? Stick around. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Friends feel it's their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me, yeah, all you want to do is use me. But my answer, on using me until you use me up.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. So, Austin Mayor Steve Adler a Democrat, as everyone is pointing out, is the latest official to not practice the COVID-19 precautions that these officials preach. Everyone is getting excited hearing that he's the latest. You know, he, you know, told everyone else, Austin residents, to stay home last month while he hosted a wedding, I guess, and vacation in Mexico. And so people are, you know, upset about that, understandably so. But, you know, it's agitprop. And so I think of the, I don't know, Lucius Trust trying to get people excited. And at the same time, you know, you have the CDC saying, don't travel again, don't travel over the holidays. All of this basically is creating this bottled up emotion. And it's so interesting. All of this just nonsense about this so-called pandemic. And I think we need to define terms, go back to the definition, because what is the, you know, the survivability of just about every demographic is through the roof. So can we really call it a pandemic? It's a case-demic, that's clear, you know, but when you have the kind of testing that's being done, I guess that's not a surprise. And speaking of that, you know, I keep an eye on the numbers in Montana in particular, and let's see. So the population in Montana is allegedly, you know, just over a million people. And so far, let's see, they're down on tests. The report yesterday, latest report yesterday, the next one will come in sometime today, but 663,581 tests. So you're telling me that, you know, what is that? That's pushing 2/3 of the state. You're telling me 2 out of 3 people have been tested in Montana? Not a chance. Not a chance. I know that there are some people who have been tested several times in Montana. 3 times, 5 times. And the results have been inconclusive. And the people that I've spoken to were what you've heard referred to as asymptomatic. So why are we testing people, you know, in this case, demic? A virus so deadly that, you know, you have to get tested to even know if you had it. Anyway, second hour coming up. Stick around. I'll be right back after this short break.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.